You're listening to the News Project Podcast for the week of November 9th, 2020, brought to you by GNAT TV. This podcast brings you these stories. The Veterans Ceremony held in Manchester. Taconican Green School Board contemplates COVID-19 and the holidays. And Bennington County's election wrap-up.
Happy Veterans Day 2020. It's great to see so many people come out here. This holiday season, we're in Manchester. We're very close to the Bennington Veterans Home. There's lots of Vietnam, World War II, and Korean veterans there who could use a little kind word this holiday season. Send a message, send a gift. Anything you can do would be really appreciated. Happy Veterans Day. Today's day of celebration, and I'm honored to be here, although briefly, with all your fellow veterans. Today is also a day of reflection, originating from the signing of the armistice on Monday, November 11th, 1918, at 11 a.m. when all the fighting ceased between the Allied nations and Germany, effectively ending World War I. 1 year later, President Woodrow Wilson proclaimed that on November 11th, Armistice Day will be a solemn day filled with pride and heroism for those who died in the country's service and gratitude for victory. Following World War II and the Korean War, Congress updated Armistice Day to be Veterans Day, amending the original act to commemorate November 11th, a day in which all American veterans are honored. Today, Veterans Day is a celebration to honor all of America's veterans for their patriotism, love of country, and willingness to serve, sacrifice for the common good. It is also a day for reflection and remembering. Whether you wear a uniform today or wore it decades ago, you represent a fundamental truth. It's not the powerful weapons that make our military the greatest in the world. It is not the sophisticated aircrafts, missiles, rockets, or satellites that make us the most advanced. The true strength of our military and our country is the spirit and skill of our service members and its veterans. The true strength of our country is seen in the men and women who have worn the uniform of our nation's military. Veterans Day 2020 finds us a nation amid a global pandemic and social unrest. Our service members have been answering the call to support and defend our nation around the country, to help with the sick, help in the need, while all continuing to serve overseas in the Middle East and Afghanistan. So today it is our privilege to say thank you to all American veterans for your quiet courage and exemplary service, to let you know that we are a grateful nation and we acknowledge your many sacrifices and accomplishments. So thank you again. At this time, I'd like our auxiliary president to come forward with a wreath dedicating to our nation's veterans. This time we're going to do a rifle salute and play tap. Detail, attention.
Fire. Load. Ready. Aim. Fire. Load.
Thank you. So yes, I've spent a tremendous amount of time in conversations with people locally as well as at the state level about the holidays. And I know that there are people, I don't know who's watching this, but there are people who, there's some speculation that there is a plan that hasn't been shared, which is not the case, or if it is, I'm not aware of it. So if somebody has a plan, they can share it with me. We have talked extensively about many options about what to do, and really landed on the fact that we expect people, we will be communicating clearly that we expect people to follow Vermont state guidance around quarantining and travel. We expect people to follow it. We expect them to follow it now. We expected it to call them to follow it last week. We certainly expect them to follow it after Thanksgiving. So for our families, as we talked about earlier, our distance learning model and the hybrid model we have is built on the ability for students to be at home, learning from home, or being in the classroom. So I fully expect that there will be families who do not come back to school right after Thanksgiving because they either had folks in their homes and they were not quarantining, or they traveled and are now needing to quarantine because of that. So our system is designed for that. What we don't know is staff. We know that our staff understand that they are expected to work. But we also understand that there are likely going to be some people who are going to require quarantine. So the approach that we've taken at this point is to try to have an understanding. I have absolutely no idea who's doing what. So we are asking people to communicate with us so that we can make sure that we can respond to, COVID-related leave requests before the holidays, that we have a sense of who may be requiring quarantine because they already know that they have travel plans that will require that, so that we can be organized and as prepared as possible. My hope is that our staff respond to that and do share with us ahead of time. I'm hoping that on Monday, November 30th, my phone doesn't start ringing at 5:30 in the morning because I find out that we don't have enough people to open our schools. So we are doing what we can in order to communicate with folks. So my hope and expectation is that we are able to open our schools and return and operate between the holidays. I think many of our families need that. Many of our children need to be in school. Many of our families need to be able to work. It's around the holidays, and I take that seriously. The idea of putting our families in a position in which they, because of something a decision that we made based on no clear hard evidence, puts them out of work before the holidays because they need to care for their children doesn't feel great to me. I don't know what's going to happen. Every single one of us probably waits every single Tuesday to see the map, which is getting, worse by the minute. I don't know what the state's going to do. I don't know what's going to happen next week or the week after. I don't know if somebody at some level is going to say we need to shut things down. Yeah, at this point, we're going to try to stay open. If something changes, it changes.
Thank you.
But that's where I am at this point.
Voters flocked to the polls on Tuesday, November 3rd, on Election Day, joining hundreds of thousands of Vermonters who had already voted by mail or absentee. Together, in-person voters and those who voted early combined to set a new record for total votes cast in a presidential election. All told, more than 372,000 votes were cast, representing about 75% of the total state electorate of about 506,000 voters. In Manchester, about 68% of eligible voters filled out ballots, and almost 82% did in Sunderland. Both polling stations reported lines of voters waiting when the doors opened on Election Day, although a higher percentage of voters in Sunderland voted in person compared to their counterparts in Manchester. In Arlington, Windhall, Weston, Dorset, and all the other towns in our region posted voter turnout in the 70 to 80% range. We had a chance to hear from Manchester's town clerk, Anita Sheldon, on how things were going on November 3rd.
We started out with a line this morning about 9:15. Things kind of settled down a little bit, but we've been steady stream all day. It's been great. Yesterday when we closed the clerk's office, we had about 2,300 absentee ballots returned and processed, and we're up to about 2,600? Yep, so 2,643 ballots so far.
So is that much higher than usual, or about the same?
A little higher than usual. In 2016, when we closed the polls, we had about 2,447 ballots in total. So we've obviously surpassed that number, but we're still going strong. A couple hours left.
So I see you have a lot more tables set up there in the hallway than I remember seeing last time I was here. What are those all for?
So we have a greeter at the door, making sure everybody wants to use hand sanitizer gets hand sanitizer. They are all wearing masks. We also have a person checking to make sure everything seems updated on the voter checklist. Then we have our two check-in stations separated because of COVID-19 and social distancing. Then we have our usual ballot clerk. And we have chosen to separate the voting booths here in Town Hall. So we have booths labeled with number ones and booths labeled with number twos. We only use one set at a time, so we always have approximately 10 to 12 clean voting booths waiting for the next voter.
In the voting on local races, Representative Cynthia Browning lost her bid for an eighth term in the legislature, as Seth Bongartz, who ran in conjunction with the other incumbent officeholder, Kathleen James, grabbed the two highest vote totals across the four-town Bennington 4 district. James got 2,797 votes, Bongartz 2,651, and Browning, who ran as an independent candidate this year, finished third with 2,111. In the contested state Senate race to represent Bennington County and Montpelier, incumbent Democrats Dick Sears and Brian Campion were easily reelected, Sears getting 11,063 votes, Campion at 10,483. They fended off challenges from two Republican candidates, Michael Hall and Meg Hansen, as well as independent candidates Kevin Hoyt. In the statewide races for governor and lieutenant governor, incumbent Governor Phil Scott cruised to an easy reelection over his challenger, Lieutenant Governor David Zuckerman, winning by more than a 40% margin of 248,000 votes to about 99,000 for Zuckerman. In the lieutenant governor's race, newcomer Molly Gray defeated Republican Scott Milne by a smaller, but still substantial, 50-43% margin, garnering more than 182,000 votes to Milne's 157,000. For the GNET TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever.
Thanks for listening local. For more local content, visit GNAT.TV.